The following presentation is part of the Beyond the Blast Doors network. You're listening to Around the Galaxy.
This is Pete Fletzer. On this episode of Around the Galaxy, we're talking to Robbie Fox of Barstool Sports. Join us as we talk about meeting Mark Hamill, navigating social media, and what we want to see in Mandalorian Season 2. So strap yourselves in, relax, and enjoy this journey around the galaxy. Welcome to episode number 78 of Around the Galaxy, the Star Wars fan talk show. I am your host, Pete Fletzer, and we are a part of the Beyond the Blast Doors network. If this is your first visit with Around the Galaxy, thank you so much for checking us out. We really appreciate you stopping by, and hopefully you have some fun and you go back and check out some of our other episodes and maybe even subscribe, like, share, and rate and review us. You can always follow us on Twitter at ATGcast to make sure you are aware of when the next shows drop, usually every Tuesday. And also, you know, be part of the Star Wars conversation with us. We're usually trying to stay out of trouble. Usually are staying out of trouble, but we're always talking Star Wars on our Twitter account at ATGcast. As I mentioned, we are part of the Beyond the Blast Doors network, which means that we share a space on the internet with five other shows. There's Postcards from the Galaxy's Edge. There's the Bombad Cast. There's Beyond the Blast Doors Live. There's Streaming Star Wars, which I do. That's my second show on the network with David Amelotti. And of course, Holo Chronicles, talking all things collecting. So you can check us all out on BeyondTheBlastDoors.com. While you're at BeyondTheBlastDoors.com, I want you to check out something we are doing. I'm very excited about in September, September 5th. From 9 a.m. Eastern Time to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, we are doing something that we are calling Podathon, and it is going to be an all-day podcasting event with all the shows in the Beyond the Blast Doors network, as well as some of our friends from other places, other podcast shows and guests and things. And we're doing this to raise money for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. They do amazing things at the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and we would love to see what we can do to help them out. So if you wouldn't mind, head on over to BeyondTheBlastDoors.com, click on the Podathon link, and you will not only see, you know, the event itself, but you'll also find a link to make a donation if you're so inclined. And speaking of donations, we have a Patreon page, as you do, patreon.com/BeyondTheBlastDoors. We are just about to start kicking off some amazing things for our Patreon members, some member exclusives like watch parties and giveaways and contests and ways to take part in the show. So we're really putting a lot of effort into our Patreon. It's about to kick into high gear. Now would be a great time to get in at the ground floor. And speaking of getting into things, let's get into this interview with Robbie Fox from Barstool Sports. Robbie is not only the UFC and MMA expert, he's also their pop culture and film and music writer and podcaster. He has a podcast called My Mom's Basement. And Robbie stopped by the show, spent some time to talk about everything Star Wars. Robbie, thank you so much for joining me today. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. So I'm familiar with Barstool Sports, and I've listened to My Mom's Basement. But for those who haven't, maybe introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your what the stuff you do.
Yeah, so I'm Robbie Fox. I'm 22 years old. I've worked for Barstool Sports going on 4 years now. This has basically been my college experience. Right out of high school, I went to college initially and got an internship with Barstool in my first semester of community college. So I wasn't really, I didn't have like a passion. I had been applying to Barstool Sports since I was 13, actually. That's kind of where I wanted to go. So I got the internship at the same time I went into college for a golf podcast, which I don't play golf. I don't pay attention to golf, but I was just like, I want to get my foot in the door.
Yeah, I'll do anything, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I love the company. So I got in the door that way, and my passions at Barstool, which Barstool is this unique company where it's a media company where we get access sometimes that you would see journalists or other media members get, but we're all kind of just fans, and we don't pretend that we're anything else. You know, we very much, it's like a we pride ourselves on the fact that we're fans, basically. Mm-hmm. So my things at Barstool are MMA mainly, like the UFC. I cover that. I cover professional wrestling, WWE style stuff, and then anything nerdy, Star Wars, Marvel, you name it. If it falls into that geeky realm, I'm on it.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's what makes Barstool kind of fun is it's not, you know, there are some stuff where you get a little bit serious about whatever serious sports topics there are or whatever, but it's a fun and you can tell it's coming from a fan's perspective, which is one of the reasons I love it. I mean, if anybody who listens to my show knows that I'm just a fan talking to other fans and that's exactly where I think where you guys come from. And so you have that and you also have the podcast, My Mom's Basement. Is that directly related to Barstool or is that a sort of a side project or how's that connected?
Yeah, no, that's all under the Barstool umbrella. So My Mom's Basement is just my podcast. And that's, you know, obviously my play on in the MMA world. A lot of the times when someone will, I mean, outside of the MMA world as well, but specifically there, you know, I'll show up to an event and people will be like, this kid is the guy that's covering cage fighting. Like, are you for real? Go back to your mom's basement. So I like to just get ahead of the story and be like, hey, welcome to My Mom's Basement. Let's talk about MMA, you know, let's talk about whatever it is. So anything that I like kind of falls under that same podcast. So it's a podcast where I would say not every episode will be for everyone, but we'll have an episode for everyone. It's one of those, you know, pick and choose your episodes. We got some about music, some about movies, some about MMA, some about Star Wars, all over the map. We've got movie commentaries, like all different kinds of stuff.
That's really cool. It's funny. It caught my attention because this is no joke. When I saw that back, I'm going to say 15 plus years ago, I was working, I was doing web development strategy and there was another guy there. And I've been a nerd my whole life. I saw Star Wars when I was 7 years old in the movie theaters. Right. So you can do the math. You can figure out my age on that. But I used to have like a Darth Vader helmet and a C-3PO head on my desk. And there was this other guy who was a super nerd too. And we talked about, this was before the internet was really taking off, and we're like, we should start a website and call it Mom's Basement, and we never did it, and I really wish we did. But then when I saw that was your podcast name, I was like, oh, somebody got it. It's awesome. So
you know what, there's another podcast too that is like mine is My Mom's Basement, and I know one started after mine, but they had the name before mine because they came after me or whatever. That's just Mom's Basement, and they cover I think that's like esports, I'm pretty sure, like the MLG gaming type stuff, which I was like, hey, the more the merrier. I don't think there's going to be any confusion there. It's a good name. Listen, as nerds, we got to embrace it. We got to get right out in front of the story. I mean, talk about Star Wars fan. I get right out in front of it with my,
oh, look at that, man.
I've got tattoo. The tattoo there.
Wow. All right, Ned. So I got to ask you, do you call that the Vader saber, the Rey saber, the Skywalker saber, the Luke saber? How do you refer to that beautiful saber on your arm there?
See, I look at it as like the Empire Strikes Back saber, but I would probably call it the Skywalker saber just because it's been through all three trilogies. I'm a guy, which maybe I'll catch some flack for this early, who loves all three trilogies. You know, I'm a sequel trilogy guy through and through and all that. So, I would say Skywalker saber, but I know there's a lot of people that are like, it's Anakin saber, MF.
Well, you know, it's funny too, because you're right. That saber is so I will admit, I mean, I'm with you. I think there's some great things about it. I love the all three trilogies. And when I first saw it advertised as Rey's saber, like I'm not too proud to admit, I was like, oh, that's a little bizarre, but I get it. I mean, for the sequel trilogy, it was her saber. Right. But it's cool. So I love hearing that you're a fan of all the trilogies, especially because you're coming from a very different sort of entree into the series than I am. Tell me a little bit about how you got into Star Wars, what some of your first exposure was to the saga.
So I've been a Star Wars fan literally as long as I could ever remember. I don't remember a time in my life where I didn't absolutely love Star Wars. And I've got videos like on my Instagram. I posted a few around the time Rise of Skywalker was coming out, of like me opening like my first R2-D2 as like a 2 or 3 year old, and me opening a new lightsaber. And it's like amazing that to look back and be like, oh my God, it's, you know, we still have this stuff. Yeah. But my brother was my exposure to it. So I've got a brother that's 12 years older than me, and shout out to Mike, and he just always raised me on everything that he loved. So it was rock and roll, it was Star Wars, it was pro wrestling. Like, that was like our holy trinity. We didn't need anything else in the world other than those three things. So I think he got onto it from our uncles and stuff from the 97 re-release. Mm-hmm. But it was just always Star Wars toys in the house, lightsabers in the house. We would color in wrapping paper tubes. We would unravel all the wrapping paper and then color in the cardboard tubes to look like lightsabers. And then, like, you would spend an hour on it and hit them once and they would flop over. You'd be like, all right, it's done. Me and all my cousins would always be, you know, when the prequels were coming out, we were super young. We were literally the target audience, maybe a little younger than the target audience at that point. Yep. I was born in 98 for context for everyone listening. So like episode two, episode one, like Qui-Gon was my guy. I thought the green lightsaber was the coolest thing. The duel of the fates, I probably made my poor grandmother watch 1,000 times, just like in the living room, recreating it and all that kind of stuff. So, and then the sequel trilogy for me is like, it feels like my trilogy in a weird way because I got to experience the whole thing. I got to experience the hype of it getting announced, the anticipation, the premiere night. Like, I remember I was on the New Jersey 12 News and they were like, look, people are in line early. And I was like me and I was, you know, front row for The Force Awakens. So I got to experience all three of those movies. I love all three of those movies. I'm going to maybe catch some flack for this. The Last Jedi is my favorite of the three, but by a decent margin. And it was just a cool experience for me, especially like I got to cover some of it through Barstool. So I got to go to Celebration and make videos where like I was with Star Wars fans and I got to experience some of the like promotional stuff. So all that stuff is just like good memories for me already looking back at the trilogy, even though it just wrapped up. It's just like almost already nostalgic.
It's funny because I think you could almost say there's a similar parallel because I was working with Lucasfilm and Star Wars Galaxy during the prequels. So I went to all the New York premieres of the prequel films and got to experience that again as a fan. And, you know, even though I was seven when I saw the film, I don't really remember much of my life before Star Wars. So it's always been there. I've always had the figures and things like that. Totally. And it's always been there. So, that's something. Tell me a little bit about that, because I know the feeling of suddenly being thrust into it with press credentials, right? What's that like? I mean, all of us as fans, I think all the fans who you know are involved in the Twitter world and all those things, we all want to be there when that happens. And you've been there, and I've been there. Tell me a little bit about some of your favorite experiences from that perspective.
So this is going to be an offshoot story before I get to like the press story, but through Barstool, like the coolest thing that's ever happened to me because of that is I made friends with someone named Jeff Lowe, who now works at Barstool. He hosts Lights, Camera, Barstool, our movie podcast. But I met him at a time where he was working at Good Morning America as their social media person. And we met at Star Wars Celebration just as fans. And we got to talking on Twitter, and we were just we're still very similar in our Star Wars fandom. Our, you know, rankings of the movies kind of align very similarly, and the way we look at things is similar. So we got to talking through that, and he hit me up right before The Last Jedi came out and said, hey man, Mark Hamill's gonna be on the show. I can like get you a guest spot if you'd like to come just be in the audience for it. And I said, oh my God, are you kidding me? Like, be in the presence of Luke Skywalker. Yes, absolutely. Like, without a question, if you can get me in the building, I will be there. And it just so happened I had the appointment for this tattoo booked like before that had even taken place, a few days before. Kind of bizarre, but I was like, maybe it's a sign, right? It's the Force. get the tattoo, whatever. Don't think much of it. I go to Good Morning America for that taping. And right after Mark Hamill's interview, which went great, Jeff kind of calls me over. He's like, come over really quickly. Come on. And he introduces me to Mark Hamill.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, you know, something out of a movie where it got all glossy eyed, the clouds parted ways, and it was the heavens. It was Luke Skywalker in front of me. Yeah. And the first thing he said, he looked down at my tattoo and he goes, oh my God, that's amazing. And he grabbed my arm and he goes, let's take a picture. And he kind of threw it up like that. And it's my Twitter picture. It'll be my Twitter picture until, I mean, the day I die, I think. I don't think I'll ever take a better picture than that in my life. But that was the coolest thing that ever happened to me through kind of the Barstool connection. And then I've gotten to go to Celebration twice. I went in Orlando and I went in Chicago. Both times they were, you know, gracious enough to grant us press credentials and let us make videos and kind of wacky stuff like that. Didn't really interview anyone. We kind of kept to ourselves and talked to fans more than celebrities or actors that were in the films or anything like that. But getting to experience the Rise of Skywalker panel with the trailer unraveling and the title unraveling last year was the coolest thing in the world. In that arena, it was like a 10,000 seat sporting arena. And they play the trailer. Ian McDiarmid comes out on the stage like he's the Undertaker. The fans are going crazy. It was the biggest like nerdgasm of all time. And it was, you know, also the most comfortable place in the world because we all looked at each other. We're all crying and we're like, yeah, we're all the same person here.
that's amazing. I've said this a couple times on the show. I've actually not been to a celebration. In fact, next week I was supposed to be going. It's my daughter's birthday. We were going to be going. And of course, you know, hey, for whatever reasons, it is what it is. And and it's unfortunate, but I will go and I cannot wait because there's everything that I've heard and everybody I've spoken to talks about how, and you use the word sort of like it's, you know, it's kind of like a safe place. It's a comfortable place because you're all that person. And it must be amazing to share that experience with everybody.
It's the friendliest environment you'll ever see. It reminds me of like going into a jujitsu gym, which might sound weird because it's like fighting and like, but jujitsu, they call it the gentle martial art, you know, and everyone's so welcoming and everyone's so, oh, hi, how are you? Where are you from? And Star Wars Celebration is just the exact same way. And it's my favorite place in the world. I call it my happy place, like kidding around. But for real, it kind of is. It's just awesome.
That's fantastic. And so I hate to ask, but you're active on Twitter, obviously. Like, how come that doesn't necessarily translate, or how do you make sure that it translates for yourself in the Twitter world? Because there's a lot of bizarre ugliness happening. And I tend to always end up talking a little bit about it on the show here. But how do you deal with that? Or do you just ignore it? Or do you ever, because I know sometimes you have some pretty interesting and fun hot takes on Barstool with some of your thinking, but do you engage with that? Or or is it a necessary part of the conversation? Because in a way, it keeps, you know, if everybody was like, yes, I loved The Last Jedi and everybody just kept it there, it would be kind of a dull place to be. But tell me a little bit about how you handle it.
So it's been tricky since The Last Jedi because, oh my God, everything's been like since The Last Jedi, you can't say that movie on Twitter without like getting 1,000 people in your mentions being like, I hate you and you ruined my childhood. You were part of the problem. Like, oh my God. But for me, I always like have focused on the positive. Like if people follow me on Barstool, they know that I always say like, if I would write movie reviews for a while. And if I didn't like a movie, I just wouldn't write a review. Yeah. People were like, you can't do that, man. Like, that's just like, you know, being impartial, but I feel like I'm going to offend somebody. Like, what if the writer read that? What if the director somehow caught wind of that? And he was a stoolie and he was like, hey, what the hell? So I've always tried to side with the positive stuff. Now saying that, people will say, what are you, just a shill then? I am completely honest in all my Star Wars opinions. Like Solo is a movie where that came out and I was like, you know what? That wasn't really my cup of tea. It was Star Wars. So anything Star Wars is going to get me going a little bit. And I'm going to say, hey, Donald Glover's Lando, that was sick. The train heist scene, that was sick. I liked Paul Bettany as Dryden Voss. He was great. So I'll always try to find the positives in that stuff.
Yeah.
And then with like the serious topics that are going on in the world, I generally don't comment on. I'm like a 22-year-old kid from New Jersey. I'm like, I don't think, you know, community college dropout, I don't think I have much to offer to the conversation. I'll stick to talking about the politics of Naboo.
Well, that's, you know, and I think that's kind of one of the things that's most frustrating is I'm with you. I mean, there are times where you want to jump in, or I don't know about you, but I want to jump in with because I know where it's coming from, right? You see somebody says something and you know which side of this the fence they're on. And I'm not going to say either one is right or wrong, but like, and in a way I kind of feel like, is it responsible to keep the real world away from Star Wars? And I kind of feel like you have to, right? Because look, I hate to use the word, you go to Star Wars for escapism and that sort of thing, but let's face it, it's entertainment and you do. And are there social messages in there? Absolutely. I mean, George did it in 1976 when he was writing the 77 film, and there's messages in it today. But we're there to kind of enjoy the Star War, right? And not all the stuff happening with us.
So. And the worst thing, I'll say this, that I will absolutely always engage with and always be like, this like needs to stop, is the toxic fandom against, you know, we saw it against Kelly Marie Tran. Yep, we saw it against Ahmed Best. All of that, I have no problem standing up for those people saying that is absurd. And the reaction that she got at Star Wars Celebration and Ahmed Best last year, like that was amazing. Could put chills on your arms, you know, like the reception that they got knowing, hey, Star Wars fans are there for you. Like, even if you didn't like the movie, like in what world is it those people's fault? Or is it anyone's fault, really? Like they made something that you didn't enjoy. It's a weird people, you know, take possessism. Is that even a word? I don't know. They're very possessive, at least, over the Star Wars films.
Right.
And that I'm always like, I kind of just enjoy. I take in the Star Wars movies for what they are. And don't get me wrong, I grew up with the prequels, but now I look back at those as like a stoner. And I'm like, these are the most entertaining movies in the world to watch because they're not very good. But I always find the things that I like about them. I'll find the things I legitimately love. And I'll find the things that I ironically love. I don't like sand. Like, that's laugh out loud comedy every time I see it now. The weird scene where he feeds her a pear and it's like the gross CGI going into her mouth. Hysterical. Like, so I always try to find the positives, even in the Star Wars movies that I don't love.
Yeah. And I think that, and that's, I used the word chill before, and that's really very funny because that's the automatic sort of knee jerk reaction from people who don't understand. Like, you can be positive. Look, there's 11 theatrical released Star Wars films. One of them is going to be number 11 and one of them is going to be number one. But at the end of the day, I like them all, and there's something in every single one of them. I'm not a Disney shill in the, by definition. Like, I don't get mailed stuff. I don't get free passes to things. But I love what they're doing. And to your point, Solo, was it perfect? Nope. Did I love it? Sure did. If that makes me a shill, then I'll take that as a tag at this point. So
the people that keep doing it's like, maybe I am a Disney shill because I do pretty much like everything they do. I'm looking down the list of every animated movie. Yep, I like that one, that one, that one. I've liked all the Marvel movies, so okay, that it's a strange thing to be. You're a shill. And another thing that I forgot to mention, by the way, which I should mention because it is gives you a little bit deeper into my fandom. My brother has two children. His firstborn is named Luke, and his daughter, her middle name is Rey. So that's awesome. That's how deep the Star Wars fandom goes in our family.
That's great. That's really cool. That's and it's funny too, because, and I've said this a lot lately, because I one of the things that I love about Disney's approach to Star Wars is it does give different entry points for everybody into the series. And gosh, people who listen to me every week are going to say, stop saying this, but it's true. My son came in at Clone Wars. Like, can you imagine starting with Clone Wars as your, that's how you got to know Star Wars. I mean, that's an amazing way to get to it. And
absolutely. That's something that we're showing Luke right now, is like, he got into it through the movies, but now he's getting into Clone Wars, and it's like, he has this entire series to go through that just exists. It's not something that's, you know, coming out, it's the new thing. No, that's Star Wars for him. That's as much Star Wars as the movies are. It's very interesting, the new generation. And God, I mean, The Mandalorian, look at that. Like, that's for the next generation. That's going to be Star Wars as much as the movies are, more than ever.
Yep. So let's talk about that, because you cover a little bit of everything about Star Wars on Barstool. And there's allegedly, by the time this drops next week after we talk, allegedly a Mandalorian trailer might be out. Hopefully might drop during the Lakers game. They're saying, who knows, whatever. Talk to me about, we'll talk about the series in a minute, but I want to get your take on the way news and rumors and scoops are coming out, the way we're learning about Mandalorian in dribs and drabs versus official releases from the cinema, from Lucasfilm. And I'd also like, if you can, compare that to, because I love the Marvel films, but I don't have a podcast about Marvel films, right? So obviously there's a bit of a difference. Did you see that same kind of thing? I don't think we saw that same kind of thing happening with those films. So maybe talk about that perspective, and just because you're so close to it as well.
Yeah, it's a good question. I haven't thought about it in comparison to Marvel, but I'll say this, for all the news about the Mandalorian that's come out, the news about Boba, the news about Ahsoka, the news about the returns of castings and all that, it's all stuff that I got so excited about seeing. And then I immediately had that reaction of like, but I wish I didn't see that. wish I found out about it through a trailer, if it showed up, or even in the show itself, you know? And it is like a give and take, because once it's out there, I'll allow myself to get excited about it, because it's like, hey, what else am I going to do at that point? But I definitely wish I didn't know about these rumors. And I definitely, I mean, look at Baby Yoda. How great was that? We didn't know Baby Yoda. That was like a talking point throughout the entire season. Everyone kept bringing up the fact that Baby Yoda was such a well-kept secret and how amazing that was. So it's like, that's not a coincidence that it was such a great thing and it was secret. In Marvel, I think you're right in that we don't see these like high scale, I don't know if you call them leaks, because the way they are leaks, I guess, but they're generally put out through like Deadline or the Hollywood Reporter. These are like massive publications, which makes it seem like someone's agent is talking to a journalist to put the scoop out, which would be super bizarre, but maybe that's how to build intrigue. Maybe that's secret marketing. Who knows?
Yeah.
Definitely not me. But in Marvel, you definitely don't see it as much. I think maybe that is a highlight as well, because thinking back to Endgame, think about how many great surprises there were in just that movie alone that were kept secret and kept under the radar. And even the next phase of Marvel, think about that, right? Like, we don't know anything about the next Spider-Man movie. We don't know anything 100%. About anything going forward. So I don't know what they need to do to keep people's lips more sealed around Lucasfilm, but they got to do something.
So, which is exactly why I start to think maybe that's part of the marketing plan. I mean, I know nothing about film marketing. I know what I like. I know what I don't like, but I don't know anything about film marketing. But you almost feel like it's a form of test marketing, right? Because unlike any other film series, I don't think too many, I know Star Wars has never done test screenings and then gone back and made changes. Yeah. So I wonder if they just want to get a sense from the audience. That's just my hunch. I have no idea. I mean, who knows?
It could very well be the case. And even I've seen people say that maybe they plant seeds sometimes and they just see what fan theory is like very popular. And I'm not saying they run with fan theories, but like the Boba Fett kind of Easter egg of hearing the beeps, right? In episode 5 of The Mandalorian, I saw a lot of people say, what if that was kind of a test screening of people being like, that could be Boba or it could not be Boba. Let's put it in there. Let's see what people say. If people are open to the idea, let's go forward with it. I think that's entirely possible. And again, I don't know anything. I'm not on the inside that way, just as a Star Wars fan.
You're not a Disney shill.
No, not a Disney shill, I swear. Even though I am wearing my Rise of Skywalker earphones.
Oh, look at that. There you go.
Bad look, you know?
So what I also, in a similar vein, what about like the alternate script kind of stuff that came out? What are your theories on that? Because I've heard people say that was deliberate because it was a sort of a vengeful act in some sort of way. Like, how did you respond to that? What do you think of that? And maybe first start, I know you, Last Jedi is your favorite of the sequels. How did you feel about Rise of Skywalker? How did that film hit you?
I thought The Rise of Skywalker was a good movie. I thought it was a pretty noticeable drop in quality from both movies, because it was just JJ had such a crazy job of trying to make everyone happy, right? Where he was definitely trying to put the pieces back together and kind of go back on some things. And it felt in a lot of ways like a sequel to The Force Awakens more than it did The Last Jedi. I saw a lot of people say that, and I agree with that. But I love The Force Awakens, so I was like, I'm down with that. And it's, for me, a balls to the wall Star Wars action movie that's incredibly rewatchable. Throw it on Disney Plus while I'm blogging all the time now, and every time I look up, there's, you know, a crazy action scene or something crazy going on the screen, where maybe it's not the best film like that, but it's just fun to watch. It's one of those Star Wars movies that gets me going every time, has a lot of awesome moments. Every Ben Solo moment in the movie for me is great. The behind the back pull, come on, that's incredible.
Oh, you wrote a piece about that, which I thought was fantastic.
Ian McDermott, every scene he has is tremendous. Yeah. He's fantastic in his return. Like the Han scene, I love. The way that they brought back Leia, I mean, for what the circumstance was, unbelievable that they were able to do what they did. A lot of us thought they were going to probably have to write her off in the crawl, to think we were going to have a Star Wars movie where they had to do that. I was very happy. In the end, I went, okay, I'm satisfied. I felt like he landed the ship. As far as What were you going with the Last Jedi? I'm sorry. No.
I was asking you about the, cause we were talking about sort of leaks and things and that alternate script. Yeah. What are your,
yes. So the Colin Trevorrow thing, I thought that might have been deliberate after it came out and all the theories came out, because we're in a world where the Snyder Cut has been, you know, such a crazy thing. And there was such a fan cry rally behind that, where when Rise of Skywalker came out and it got a lot of lukewarm reaction and reviews and people said it's a jumbled mess and all that. I think, yeah, maybe it wasn't Colin Trevorrow, but it was maybe in someone in his camp that still felt, hey, we were going to make a better Star Wars movie, and they went and made this pile of junk and they didn't like it or whatever. Yeah. And they decided, let's put our script out there. I read the summaries and I found it incredibly fascinating as a Star Wars fan that likes the behind the scenes stuff, you know, likes the concept art. And I have all the concept art books. That's kind of my favorite stuff. The reused Ralph McQuarrie stuff from all throughout the years. Like, so as that kind of Star Wars fan, I was like, I was incredibly intrigued by the entire thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I think that's a good way to look at it. It's sort of like, this is where it could have gone. It's sort of like, you know, the original Starkiller story that Lucas had written. Right. I mean, if it went that direction, we're talking a different movie. We're talking a different franchise altogether. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a fair thing. You mentioned Snyder Cut, and that's I'd love your thoughts on the slippery slope that creates. How do you feel about them going forward and allowing him to release that through HBO Max, I guess it is?
I'm happy to see it. I'm not one of these guys that was like, release the Snyder. I wasn't rallying for it necessarily. Right. I'm people call me a DCEU apologist all the time, because I think all the movies are generally like fine until the third act or something.
Yes. Yeah, in the third act, they look like CGI madness. Like
CGI, yes, exactly. Yep. It's a jumbled mess of CGI. Suicide Squad is the worst example or the best example, but, you know, the worst case of that. Even Wonder Woman, which is maybe my favorite, I would say, of the DCEU movies. By the end, I was like, oh, okay, we're still going with the CGI big monster at the end. Okay. So I think they're probably on the right path. I'm excited for the Christopher Reeves Batman movie, and I'm excited to see Zack Snyder's cut of Justice League. But it is a slippery slope, because I saw some people tweeting hashtag release the air cut of Suicide Squad. And I was like, there's just no way there's a much better cut of that movie that exists. There's just no way. There's no way in my mind. So I'm one of these. But I'm also a guy that loves the Donner cut of Superman 2. So I'm like, if that cut exists, I like the director's cut of Daredevil, which is an obscure one. People are like, Ben Affleck Daredevil. But if you go back, the director's cut has a little more violence, a little less romance, and it's just a different vibe. So, you know, if it works, it works. Then I'm excited to watch, especially that they're saying like 75% of the movie is going to be new.
I'm shocked. That's shocking.
And as a film fan, I'm excited to see how Joss Whedon put together his version of the movie with 25% of the movie that was already filmed. Like, I'm excited to see how the puzzle piece was put together.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. It'll be an interesting study in film. I think you see things even like, and this is a weird example to use, but I think it fits. And especially in the call in the Star Wars world for people who give me, we deserve this, or we should have gotten that. And that's a phrase. Whenever I see a tweet that starts with "we were robbed" or something, I'm like, no, you weren't. That was it was a filmmaker's decision. But the example I talk about sometimes with friends is the Sonic the Hedgehog thing, right? When that first Sonic came out, God, I will admit that thing freaked me out.
With the human teeth.
No, it was weird. But they fixed it, and actually, it's not a terrible movie. I mean, I have a 7-year-old that likes it, so that's probably where my head's at. I don't know that I would like it myself, but I enjoy, but it was the right thing to do to respond to the fans there. But we are in this sort of world where people have this very demanding thing. It must be, this is really a scary, not scary, but very difficult time to be a filmmaker, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, you hear people talk about it in terms of comedy all the time, right? People are like, it's impossible to make comedies in this day and age because people are just going to be offended by everything, or people are going to find something to pick apart about it, especially Star Wars. Think about, like, Rian Johnson still has this trilogy looming. Imagine being him and just feeling the pressure of that. He says all the time he loves the Star Wars fans, but just, you have to know, as a human, like, there are these toxic people that are going to hate it no matter what. They're going to have an agenda to come after him. They're going to say nasty stuff to him no matter what. They're not going to give it a chance. Whereas, like, I'll come at it. If you want to give the guy that made my least favorite movie in the world a Star Wars movie, do it. Sure. It's another Star Wars movie. So I'm never going to complain about more Star Wars. If I don't like it, I don't like it. So I'm fine with that. Like, that's not an issue to me.
Yeah. And I think it's a very weak take for people to say that it ruined the other movies for them, because it didn't. It can't, right?
It can't.
I use the example.
These movies didn't exist. Like, the original trilogy is what the original trilogy is.
Right. The example I use all the time is, I didn't like the last two or three Metallica albums, but I'm always going to have Master of Puppets. I'm always going to have Injustice for All. Like, I'm always going to have those. And I don't have to love the new stuff. And I think we need to kind of get back to that. Otherwise, to your point, I think entertainers, whether it's directors or writers, are going to get gun shy, and we're going to lose great opportunities. Like, Taika Waititi doing Star Wars, I think that's an amazing call. I can't wait to see, because people often forget. And, you know, I think Ragnarok, this is quickly becoming a superhero podcast today, but that's okay. I think Ragnarok was a fantastic bridge for the Thor character to get him to be able to work in the galaxy, Guardians of the Galaxy group, by adding that humor. And Taika did it in a way that was so great. And people forget that Star Wars, some of the best parts of Star Wars are the funny parts.
100%.
You go back and like, I always remember when the Star Wars films were re-released, and I took my dad instead of him taking me, and I saw it in a theater with people, and C-3PO says, "Curse my metal body, they're dying." And people laughed at that scene, right? The trash compactor scene. We all laughed in the audience. Now, we'd all seen it on our couch for the last 30 years at that time, and we're like, "Oh, that was funny." But when you see it in a theater, you remember that humor is where it's at. And Taika has that ability to take things. And, you know, Jojo Rabbit is how you can find humor in Nazi Germany is that's brilliance. And I hope he doesn't get gun shy. I hope he doesn't feel the pressure and kind of walk away from it. Although he did some great things with Mandalorian.
You know, I don't think he is, because I read a quote from him from a few years ago that said someone said, like, "Would you take a Star Wars movie?" And he's like, "No way, because it would ruin my, like, what I would do with it would ruin my career or something." He implied that he was going to get, like, so, you know, wacky with it and so over the top. I love everything he does. Jojo Rabbit, I thought, was brilliant. Thor Ragnarok, I can't say enough great things about, but I feel like everyone in the world says great things about it, so I don't even need to. And What We Do in the Shadows, if you haven't seen that, I mean, one of the funniest shows on TV and one of the funniest movies, like, mockumentaries out there. I'm a huge mockumentary guy. I'm sure you, Spinal Tap, if you're a metal guy.
Absolutely. Yep.
Come on. Yeah. So Taika, I love, and his Mandalorian episode, like you said, that even the banter just between the stormtroopers in the beginning of it, brilliant. Oh, yeah. And, like, showcase that style of humor that he has. Yep. I've said with my co-host on My Mom's Basement all the time, I would love for Star Wars to expand even more than it has now, and for them to give someone like Seth Rogen a movie in the Star Wars universe, and for them to say, this doesn't even have to be canon, you could call it Star Wars Anthology, Star Wars Legends, call it whatever you want, and say, hey, make a stoner comedy, but it just takes place in the Star Wars universe, where it's focused on maybe those two scout troopers from that Mandalorian episode, and the whole movie's a comedy. It doesn't have to have world-ending stakes or galaxy-ending stakes. And then give someone a horror movie in the Star Wars universe. And then give someone, you know, a different kind. And just let's expand it where it could be anything. And we could have so many different things. And I feel like Star Wars is a franchise where the galaxy is big enough for all that stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I think you're right. I think, like, even it may be an indirect connection, but the Lego series of Star Wars shows on Disney, right there. That's not canon, but it's fun.
I know. We're going to get the holiday special. It's going to be full of Easter eggs for the diehard Star Wars fans that we're going to geek out over. Like, it's already, I'm excited for it. I'm already anticipating, like, please let it be Life Day. It's got to be Life Day, right? It's got to be. Like, so, like, stuff like that. That's more of that. Give me more of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's great. That's cool. So what do you want to see in Mandalorian season 2?
I've been saying since early on in season one, you can go back. Mm-hmm. We did recap episodes every morning. We would wake up mm-hmm. super early at Barstool, get into the office. We would do a recap right after we watched the episode. And super early on, I've been saying I would love for season two to be the Mandalorian versus Boba Fett and yeah. them treat the entire thing like more Western than they even got in season one, where they do like, you know, Billy the Kid is coming into town and this guy, yeah. Boba Fett, they don't even know if it is Boba Fett. Maybe it's like Boba mm-hmm. Fett's armor, but they're like, that Boba Fett, that guy died in the Sarlacc, whatever. Yep. However you treat it that way, I want to see more of that. And also, this is maybe a weird, just strange aesthetic request.
Yeah.
But I want to see the Mandalorian start to paint his armor to match Baby Yoda. I want it to be a nice lime green.
Look at
him
that.
And the child cool. matched. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that would be pretty cool. I think the That's more his idea. Armor evolves, kind of Iron Man style. Like I kind of looked at it like that in the beginning, where he had a janky set of armor, and then yep. he got the nice shiny silver set. And yep. then, all right, let's give this thing a paint job.
I like that idea. I didn't think of that. I'm with you. I've been saying as well, I do a show on Friday nights called Streaming Star Wars, and we just talk about Disney Plus Star Wars stuff. In fact, I have to have you on. We do a Mando rewatch right now. We're on season episode 5, I Dude, think. We'll have to have you on.
Anytime.
Awesome. Anytime. We'll get you there. But we were talking about how... this concept, especially now that we know that Temuera Morrison is going to be doing something, right? Is he going to be Rex? Yep. Is he going to be, could he be Rex? Yes. Could he be Boba? Yep. Could he be both?
Could he sure. be both? Yeah.
Right. And I would love to see either as a direct connection, because Mandalorian, I'm about to totally geek out, but it's a Star Wars podcast. So let's do this. We've had this question as to whether or not Boba Fett was truly Mandalorian or not, right? Was Jango yeah. Fett Mandalorian? They never really George always kind of dodged around it. They never really gave the answer. So that concept of what makes somebody Mandalorian, because we know Din is at least rescued by Mandalorian. So
yes, kind of adopted Mandalorian.
Right. So imagine the two of them kind of getting together. And then I would love to see Rex meet Boba Fett, the only true child of Jango Fett, and all the clones. I mean, imagine that is that's such a cool concept, right?
You just put chills on my arms talking about that for real. Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff that I'm with you. I want to see that. But what's amazing is I also want, give me, you know, 8 solid Baby Yoda episodes, right? And,
yes, they're gonna as much Baby Yoda as you could give me, shove them down my throat. I'll take them. 100%. I'm still waiting on I ordered the $400 Baby Yoda when they
put you
it
did.
On, I'm still waiting on it. But we haven't even mentioned, like, The Mandalorian is such an amazing show. We haven't even mentioned we're going to find out what's happened to the Darksaber since Clone Wars yes. and Rebels. Like,
yep.
that. Give me more Gus Fring in Star Wars. Like,
yeah.
just an unbelievable yep. another fold that we're going to have where this guy who knows that Cara Dune is from Alderaan, he knows the name of Din Djarin, right? He knows all this yep. stuff about our main characters. Give me more him. Give me, yep. and he's teasing it. Giancarlo Esposito has said, yes. like, he goes to town with that saber. So, oh my God, give me some of that too.
I can't wait for it. Now, how do you feel? So, you're a Clone Wars fan. So how do you feel about seeing Ahsoka in real life? And how do you feel about Rosario Dawson as Ahsoka?
I am a huge Rosario Dawson fan. So, as a Jersey kid, I'm a huge Kevin Smith guy. Way back to Clerks,
right?
And way back to Clerks. Yes, yeah. I love. So, I'm all in. And she's also been saying for years that she wanted to play this character.
Yes.
And my biggest thing is, if you put true passion behind what you're doing in Star Wars, like, I'm going to support you no matter what. If it comes yeah. from a place of love, and obviously it does with her. So I think it's a great fit. I think it's a great look too. You've seen, like, I'm yep. sure the Photoshops that fans have done and stuff yep. where they'll put the paint on her and it looks pretty good.
Yeah.
I love the fact that the character has gotten as much shine as she has, especially with the final season of the Clone Wars, right?
Yeah.
With all the troopers painting their helmets to match her paint. Yeah. Just tremendous. So, like, it's a character that also George Lucas created. So it's kind yeah. of a nice thing that he's going to get to see come to fruition. I just saw a quote from him where he said he loves watching The Mandalorian as a fan. Like, it's,
yeah.
he said it's the first time where he feels like he could truly take, like, a deep breath and just watch Star Wars as a fan. And yep. I'm excited for him to get to see a character that he created and then Dave Filoni very much molded into this, one of the greatest characters in all of the Star Wars universe,
yeah.
Reach live action. And if the rumors are true that this might be some kind of tent pole to launch her own spin-off solo Disney Plus series. Yep. All for that.
Yep. Yep. 100%. And like you said, there's, We're saying the same things. I love hearing it because that's what I said about Rosario. There's people who like, it's gotta be Ashley. Well, I love Ashley. Her voice and her spirit is in Ahsoka. But if you're going to give it to somebody who's been saying since before Disney Plus existed, I think it might have even been before Disney bought Star Wars. I don't know for sure, but she certainly has said publicly, I want to be Ahsoka. And
yep.
Not a lot of Star Wars, not a lot of actors are saying, I want to be this character. Sure, a lot of them say, I'd love a Star Wars role, but none of them are saying, I want to be that character, especially this sort of, I always compare, when I do my sort of Star Wars comparisons, I compare them to myself and either my dad or my best friend. We're all big Star Wars fans, but they don't watch Disney Plus and that sort of thing. So they wouldn't know. They don't know who Ahsoka is, but if she comes to life and they can make her a character that they like, that's awesome.
Yeah, Rosario Dawson, if she, like an actress of her magnitude, knows enough about Ahsoka to want to play her, yes, absolutely. Like, give her the part without question. Don't even make her audition. Yeah.
Right. Let's see if the head tentacles fit and you're good. Let's make this happen.
And my big hope, and I know that I'm echoing just what a lot of Star Wars fans want to see, is for in some way, a live action Hayden Christensen to be on screen with Ahsoka. In any way, I think that would probably be more appropriate for the Obi-Wan series, a flashback there. Yeah. But if you do, a spinoff Ahsoka series, could be just as appropriate there. If they find a way to make that happen, can you imagine the Star Wars nerds going crazy for that?
So if you got chills on the Boba Fett, Rex, Cody combination, I had somebody on my show recently, and I wish I could remember who it was who said it because I want to give them credit. But this freaked me out because I think it's brilliant and it's exactly what you're saying. So we bring Ahsoka back, whether she has her own series or she's part of Mandalorian, and she sacrifices herself because for whatever reason, right? Because that's what she would do. What if she is met by the Force ghost of Anakin and welcomed to being one with the Force from Anakin? That, I mean, I'm getting chills just,
I mean,
just
saying. Yeah, you, me too, brother. I mean, yeah. And
that's the way to make that happen.
A chance to make it Rosario as well. You don't have to do a younger Ahsoka by any, but I also have a casting for younger Ahsoka. Sarah Hyland, by the way. Look at pictures of Sarah Hyland.
All right.
Ahsoka. I think she's kind of got the same facial structure, but I like that idea a lot. And you could also have her meet, I mean, in that case, you could also have Yoda standing in the background. You could have Obi-Wan standing in the background, Mace stand. You could just have them have that conversation, but wow, that would be awesome. I mean, I'm all for it. If you could bring Hayden back, I think the time is right. Since you're bringing Ewan back now, you're doing his series, like, let's make things right again, as they said in The Force Awakens.
Isn't it funny how, like Ken Napzok, I don't know if you listen to him at all, and he calls himself,
been on my podcast.
Okay, yeah, he's awesome. He's been a guest on my show.
Great
as well.
Guy.
He calls himself a reformed prequelist, and that's what I call myself, because I will admit, when I walked out of the premiere in New York City of Phantom Menace, I'd be lying if I said I loved that movie when I walked out. And now I look back at those, and it's funny because Hayden, people are like, oh my God, he was cardboard in episode 2 and 3, and now we want him back. And
totally. Everyone's kind of 100%.
I don't know one person who's like, nah, we don't want him back. No, we want him back somehow. Anyway, let's see what we can do with him.
It's like the Steve Bartman, to make a sports reference. Everyone's like, we were too hard on him. We were doing it too hard. Let him throw out the first pitch. Let him throw out the first pitch of the game. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, that's cool. All right. Well, I'm going to have you come back on Streaming Star Wars, but, and I know that I promised you I'd keep you on a certain amount of time. So I want to get to my 10 question segment with you, and maybe we'll just have to have you back another time. So this has been a blast so far, but here's the 10 questions. It's sort of like the Inside the Actor's Studio. There's no wrong answers. And if you want to expand on an answer, absolutely enjoy it. Have fun with it. And some of them are short responses though as well. So we'll start with the first question, which is, what is your favorite Star Wars movie, TV show, or book?
This one's easy for me. I feel like it's probably the same answer most people have, but it is my favorite movie of all time. It's The Empire Strikes Back. It's the movie that I had written on my name tag at AMC Theaters when I worked there for a brief stint in high school. You know, they put the little favorite movie on there.
Yep.
Empire is a movie that I've watched 1,000 times. It's a movie that I might put on tonight just because we talked about it. It's one of those things. You mention it and it's like, man, I could watch the Battle of Hoth right now. Yeah. I could quote it from start to finish. It's perfect in every way. The comedy in it is amazing. Talk about Star Wars comedy, like the George Lucas, Larry Kasdan combo of comedy there. One of my favorite lines is when Lando comes in to greet Han and Leia, and he looks at the C-3PO and he's just absolutely fried. And he said, "Problem with your droid?" And Han's so just like, "You're talking to my lady." He's like, "No, no problem. Carry on." It's got that. It's got my favorite underrated moment in all of Star Wars, which is when the door opens and they're sabotaged. Our heroes are sabotaged and Darth Vader standing at the end of that dinner table. Yep. My favorite underrated moment is Han Solo, my guy, immediately takes that blaster out and fires like five shots at Darth Vader. Doesn't hesitate. That doesn't get mentioned enough as just an awesome, badass moment. The "I love you, I know" is the best romantic moment in all of Star Wars. The lightsaber fight between Luke and Vader is my favorite lightsaber fight in all of Star Wars. Doesn't get more dramatic and emotional than that, right? And then look at just "That is why you fail." Yoda lifting the X-Wing out of the water on Dagobah. That's, I mean, it's Empire Strikes Back, without a shadow of a doubt, you know, my favorite movie ever.
It's mine as well. And I just recently tweeted my favorite movie from each of the sequels, and I picked Empire because it was when we expanded the universe, right? Up until then, it was a very compact little story about a farm boy who beats the big bad Empire. And then
you don't even know the Force could move things till Empire.
Correct. I mean, I wrote on my website, I wrote a sort of a tongue in cheek review of The Empire Strikes Back, written as they would write a review today. And that whole thing. Yeah. All of a sudden you can move things with a light.
I thought the exact same thing. I've looked at the new movies and then the old movies through that lens.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that. Like, we should write a review one day like that. So it's amazing that you did that.
I'll send you a link. It's a lot of fun.
I need to read that. Yeah.
That's cool. All right. So I have to ask the opposite question, which is, what's your least favorite Star Wars movie, TV show, or book?
This is an interesting one, because like I said, like, I'm generally very positive. I generally find the positives in a lot of Star Wars things. So I don't have an answer off the top of my head. I'll say this, and I think it's just because it's my least favorite movie, so it sticks out, and it would be Solo, and I find it to be the least rewatchable movie for me. And it's because it took a few things. First of all, I didn't want the movie to get made, so I came at it from a sense of like hesitation immediately, because I was like, I'm one of those guys that was just like, I'd rather just see Harrison Ford play Han Solo, and if not for him, you could leave the character alone. I thought the guy that played him, Alden Reich, I always
Alden Ehrenreich,
horribly, but I thought he did a decent job. I didn't think he was horrible. I thought the movie was fine. I would actually call it good. And if they wanted to do a sequel series with Donald Glover, I would be down for it. And I've watched Solo a bunch of times. There's a lot of stuff I like about it. But the one thing I don't like is that it felt like it checked too many boxes of like, hey, let's explain this. Let's explain this. Let's explain this. And it went too far for me when they did the "What's your name?" Yeah. And he was like, Han. He's like, "Where do you come from?" And he's like, I don't have a family. And he's like, Han Solo, eh?
Yeah.
And then it's like, this guy went by that for the rest of his entire, like, that, him kind of becoming responsible for the Rebel Alliance in the end. I just didn't love a few things about it. So I'd probably say Solo.
That's fair. That's fair. As Jason Fry said on my show, you know, it's your 11th favorite Star Wars film. So it's,
exactly. And it's a movie that I'll rewatch and enjoy every time I put it on.
And I'm glad. I'd like to hear you say that you're basing it on rewatchability, because that's why for me it's Attack of the Clones, because of all the movies, that's probably the one that I grab least to watch. I don't like it, but
slightly above Solo, but not by much. I always when people talk about the prequels, and people always say the Phantom Menace, the worst. I always think the Phantom Menace is by a margin better than Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, I agree with you on that 100%. All right, so next question is, would you consider yourself an Imperial or a Rebel?
I mean, does any more need to even be said? It's the Rebel Alliance for life. Rebel scum until the day I die.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, it's proof. You don't have the Vader tattoo. You got the Luke tattoo, or the Skywalker tattoo. So cool.
Yeah.
All right, what is your favorite Star Wars sound effect?
Great question. Wow. I'm going to take a second to think about this.
Take your time.
All right, I got my answer. So I have an answer, and then I'm going to give a Rise of Skywalker answer because I thought the sound design in the Rise of Skywalker was brilliant, and there's a moment in there where the Emperor gets all the power from Rey and Kylo, and he shoots lightning into the sky, and it kind of just sounds like they like overload the speakers. Coolest sound ever in the theater, though. Very, very dope. My favorite sound effect in Star Wars is the powering down of the Death Star engines right before the Death Star blows up. That
That's awesome,
because it's just a sound of victory. It's just, you know, the taste of defeat for the bad guys, and it's just, here we are. I didn't want to go some cliche like a lightsaber, which is classic, or like the pew of a TIE fighter or X-wing. All great sound effects, but I'm gonna go just the sound of victory for the Rebels.
That's great. Yeah, it's I've done, this is my 78th show, and you're the first one to call that one out. That's a great call. Love it.
Awesome.
That's
excellent. I love that. A deep cut.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that's so cool. That's a great one. All right. So who's your favorite droid, R2, 3PO, or BB-8?
This is a tough question for me. This is a fair question for my co-host. My co-host, R2 is his favorite character in all of Star Wars. He saw R2 at Celebration. He went up, gave it a hug. He's one of those guys. but for me, I think it might be BB-8. I love BB-8. BB-8 just reminds me of a little dog. And I'm such a dog guy. I have two little dogs myself. That when I see BB-8, I'm like, oh, like it's a little puppy. When Poe Dameron walks up to it, he rubs its belly. You know what I mean? So like I see that thing. I have the little BB-8 Sphero. I have the Funko Pops of it. Listen, I love R2 and 3PO. Don't get me wrong. My first car, 2008 Toyota Corolla, blue, threw an R2 sticker on the back, called it R2. I'm going to go with the new school guy, BB-8. I got to go with him.
But I think your points about Poe's relationship with him are so important too, because I just noticed, I was watching Last Jedi again the other day, because that is among my favorite Star Wars movies as well. And when he sees BB-8 again in the cave and crate, when Finn and Rose crash land, he rubs his belly like he would your dog.
Scratches his belly.
It's so great.
It's awesome.
So
even in Rise of Skywalker, like when he shows up on what is it? Not Kimiji. It's the Rebel base planet, wherever it was, Algin Kloss or whatever it was.
Yeah.
He shows up on that, and Rey's asking about the Falcon, and he's immediately, what'd you do to my droid? What'd you do to BB-8? He's looking at him, and just that whole relationship, I love it. It reminds me, like me looking at my dog. Like if anyone mistreated my dog, I'd be like, what did you do to my little dog? So I'm going to go BB-8.
That's awesome. That's great. Okay. So what spaceship or vehicle from the Star Wars universe would you most like to own?
If this one is also very easy for me. Actually, stay right there.
He's back. He's got the X-Wing pilot helmet on. There it is. Yes.
It would definitely be an X-Wing.
I have that same helmet, like just out of reach over on the side here. That's great. So an X-Wing is your thing. Yeah.
It's maybe, you know, the cliche down the middle, but that's like my number one. Anytime I played Battlefront, anytime I played any of those Starfighter video games as a kid, X-Wing was always my pick. I just think it's the coolest ship design. It's what, you know, Luke flew, and man, did I get a kick out of them bringing it back in Rise of Skywalker when they say, you know, Red 5 to Red Commander. Like, oh, you just saying Red 5. That's what I call my nephew, is a nickname. Hey, little Red 5, get over here.
That's awesome. That's, you know, it's funny too, because it's like the TIE fighter and the X-Wing. When you look at those original models, you're like, oh my God, those, if they went that route, Star Wars would have been horrible.
Even more junky than you could ever imagine.
But they look so real. Like they could actually work. Like they could fly. And you're right. It's such an iconic vehicle. It's really great. So
love everything about it too, like the orange jumpsuit, what the pilots wear, everything about that. I also like the Hoth like snow speeders. Those would be my second pick. I thought those were really cool.
Yep. Yep. And I, you know, I remember as a kid going and seeing Empire Strikes Back for the first time and just, I made that connection between they're still wearing the same pilot uniform, but they're getting into a different ship, but the ships are just as, you know, they're gray and streaky and beat up.
Gritty.
And,
yep.
And there was my guest last week mentioned that, you know, that's what makes the Rebel Alliance so cool is they all have the orange jumpsuits, but they all have different helmets. They all have their own personality. Whereas the Empire, they're all just flat black all the way through, you know, or glossy black all the way through. And
everyone has their own helmet design, their little markings. Yeah, absolutely.
Even the stripes on the X-Wings. And
it's like fighter pilots, right? They all have their own helmets and stuff. So that stuff is, awesome.
That's very good. All right. So you got to pick one of these, Porg, Ewok, or Jar Jar Binks. Who's your favorite?
It's going to be, it's definitely between an Ewok and a Porg because they're just adorable. I'm a guy, you give me a cute, cuddly thing, I'm going to go for that. I love the Porgs. The Porgs are pretty sweet. But I'm going to go with a classic. I'm going to go with Ewok. Shout out to Warwick Davis. He was maybe the guy I geeked out over the most at Celebration. And I didn't even meet him. I just saw him on his Segway going through the Celebration floor. I just screamed to him, Warwick, I love you. I was that guy. but I'm going to go with an Ewok, and I'm going to pitch you a comedy right here, Star Wars comedy. What if we just remake Ted, but Ted is an Ewok this time? And you put it on Endor, and you put the same writing team behind it. Shout out Alex Sulkin, Seth MacFarlane, all those guys. And we do Wicket.
Just like a wise-ass Ewok. I like it.
Give him the mass hole accent, all that stuff. Yeah.
You Seth MacFarlane's voice coming out of Wicket would be so. All right, if anybody's listening to this, they got to go and they got to make a video of that. Just mash them up. Let's see a Ted Ewok mashup.
Yeah, all right, him talking to Leia. Somehow make his voice come out in those scenes.
That'd be great. All right, so if you could be any character in Star Wars, who would it be and why?
It's a good question. A very good question. Realistically, I would be such a low pressure character. I would be a background character that you would never even hear about because I got anxiety and I wouldn't be able to deal with any of the stuff the main characters deal with. Right. But who I would like to be is Han. Nobody's cooler than Han. I'm a Luke guy through and through, right? I love Luke. He's my hero.
Right.
Han's the guy you want to be. Han's as cool as it gets. The shrug, the way he shoots Greedo under the table. Han shot first. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. And by the way, if we're going to rally behind any cut of any movie to get released, can we not rally behind theatrical cuts of these movies to get released? Like, I know we have for years, but let's put the force we put behind that. Let's get a hashtag or something like the release the Snyder cut. I want the theatrical versions of the movies, or at least some version that has, you know, not McClunky in it.
Yeah. Well, let's get, there's no reason why Disney Plus can't do that. And by the way, I just got, I feel like I'm really behind, but I just got a 4K television for my family room. And I went all in. It's a 75 inch. It's ridiculous.
Oh, nice.
And watching anything Star Wars in 4K is life-changing. So give me the original cut of Star Wars, but like clean it up and let Han shoot first. Let's, you know, keep the original rubbery dewbacks and there's no reason why they can't do that. And you know what, if they're using the Snyder cut to get people to buy HBO Max, which they are, which I probably will because of that. Right. Totally. Even though I'm not necessarily a DCEU guy, I have to see this. That will get people who are on the fence about Disney Plus to be like, yep, I'm doing it. I got to check it out. So,
and all right, release the holiday special. We want it remastered in 4K.
Oh, but have you watched, you must have watched it. Actually, you did a piece on it, right?
It's actually a tradition of mine. Every Christmas Eve, I'll watch it and I'll do a Twitter thread every night of my favorite bizarre moments from it.
It is hard to watch, but
incredibly hard to watch
because it's so long too. It feels like it's a 7-hour movie. It just,
and there's conversations that are 7 minutes long between Wookiees with no subtitles. And what in the world were these guys thinking? It was like they gave them acid and they said, go make a Star Wars movie.
And Dorothy from Golden Girls is in it, for goodness sake. It's just it makes no sense.
There's a few musical numbers, you know. They got the my favorite purchase though, last year at Star Wars Celebration, they made a lunchbox out of the cartoon panels from the actual cartoon segment of it. So it's got Boba Fett on one side. It's got the weird long face, a Han Solo that looks nothing like him. Like the kind of strange cartoons. I think 3PO tied up, but I just love that stuff. And I loved them saying in The Mandalorian, your ancestors rode the Mythosaur, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, bro, you're talking about that in the first episode. They made a shout out to Life Day. Yep. So that was like Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni reaching through the screen and being like, we got you. Yeah. We got you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I was just reading something. And it might have been a thing you were mentioning about George Lucas, but this concept of just being, actually, I can't remember where it was. I wish I could remember. It doesn't matter. But this, the concept that, like, you have to remember when you put things together that come from, whether it's Marvel or DC or the Star Wars universe, that you have to build it so that people like you and I will be like, yes, I remember that from Life. The Life Day mention hits me square. I get that.
Yes.
Most people will, it'll go right over the head, but, and that doesn't matter. Like, recognizing, I've said this on the show 100 times, because one of my favorite non film characters, other than Ahsoka, is Thrawn. And if they had Thrawn instead of Grand or Allegiant General Pride, nobody would have cared. Like, you and I would have been like, holy crap, that's Thrawn, that's awesome. Whereas my dad and my best friend would be like, the blue guy was pretty cool. Like, perfect. And that's all, right?
Just throwing up the guy blue. I mean, we could probably make a cut of that ourselves. We could just go over with highlighter and make Richard E. Grant, you know,
And Richard E. Grant would have been a cool Thrawn, a cool older Thrawn.
He would have been real good, yeah. Did you see the celebration poster, though? It looked like they just took an old picture of Pierce Brosnan and they colored him blue.
And I mean, when I when I saw that picture, I thought, okay, we're getting Thrawn in Rise of Skywalker. He's going to be, it's going to be Pierce Brosnan. It's going to be, but they didn't do it. But
no, it's just the artist was like, I don't know, Pierce. He's a good reference.
Nobody will pick up on this. Yeah, everybody.
Immediately Star Wars fans. Yeah. That microanalyze everything. He didn't know who he was dealing with.
Right. All right. So what's your favorite trilogy? I feel this is going to be a tough question for you, because is it originals, prequels? No, it's not. Okay.
No, this one's so easy for me. It's the originals. The originals, I feel like I rewatch once a month and I'll never get tired of them. Love all three. Incredibly with all my heart. They bring me so much joy. Like, anytime I'm having a bad day, I could put on any one of those movies and the day doesn't end so harshly. I would say sequels probably after that, which I know some people would be like, oh my God, you grew up with the prequels, you traitor. And then prequels. But yeah, just right now I feel sequels are more rewatchable for me. I love so many of the action sequences and the sequels are just tremendous. The fight against the Praetorian Guards in Last Jedi. That whole thing. I love the Rey versus Kylo Ren fight in Force Awakens. I felt like that was such a perfect blend between the prequel style of flashy, go, 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 here's all the time, all the action, and then the originals, which was a lot of emotionally driven. That moment in the middle of the lightsaber battle where Kylo Ren knocks down Finn, and then he calls to the lightsaber, goes into Rey's arms. That might be the best moment any lightsaber fight ever. Yeah. So I would say originals, sequels, prequels, but the originals is far and away. Those will be my favorite. That'll be my favorite trilogy till the day I die.
Excellent. That's fair. Great. All right. So the last question is this: what is your favorite Star Wars quote?
Ooh, this is a tough one. I mean, there's just a thousand, more than a thousand. What will I go with here? And I don't want to use a cliche one either, because I think some quotes every day in my life. I think do or do not, there is no try. That's one of those that goes through your mind every day. If you're a Star Wars fan, that's just ingrained in you.
Yep.
That is why you fail. One of those things in your mind. I liked Yoda's. It's a lot of Yoda for me. It's a lot of the Yoda wisdom. I liked his in The Last Jedi when he says, that is what we grow beyond.
Right.
As teachers are, you know, I don't have the quote directly. You know the one I'm going for?
Yeah.
I wouldn't put that as my absolute favorite, but I'm just saying, going through some in my head. It's a lot of Yoda wisdom. I don't know what that says about me. There's a lot of Dexter Jetster stuff that comes to mind, obviously.
Right. I mean,
not really.
Who doesn't have Dexter Jetster as their life coach?
You know what I'm going to go with? And man, if you, this is going to be, people are going to be like, you're picking a fucking quote from The Last Jedi. I hate you. I'm going to go with Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker's amazing monologue to Kylo Ren at the end of that movie on Crait, where he says, amazing. Every word you just said is wrong. I will not be the last Jedi. You know, the whole thing that ends with that, where he says, today the rebellion is reborn. And they cut to all of these montages of Rey lifting the rocks and the rebels kind of with hope in their eyes and these glimmers of hope. And just, it's Luke Skywalker being everything that I ever envisioned he would be. You know, I hesitate to say you would ever envision him to be, because people would be like, I didn't envision that. They ruined his character.
That's not my Luke Skywalker.
Exactly. But for me, it was like, oh my God, he's Yoda in this moment. Yep. He's being Yoda. He's not hurting anybody. He's delaying things. He's using the Force in the truest sense of the Force ever. And this kid, he probably wouldn't hurt this kid. His nephew, all the people that said, why would Luke stand over him with the lightsaber, right? It's like, well, in the end, he went back on that moment of that lapse in judgment, as he called it. Yep. So I would say my favorite Star Wars quote is when he says, amazing, every word you just said is wrong. I will not be the last Jedi. That puts chills in my arms. My favorite shot in all of Star Wars, which I swear one day I'm going to get like a nice canvas printed of it, is that shot from behind him where all the AT-ATs are lined up and he's just standing before him. You know, what am I going to do? Go stand down the First Order with my laser sword? Yeah. And there he is standing there and with the sunset behind him on Crait. I think that's one of the most beautiful shots, if not the most beautiful shot in the entire franchise.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We talked a little bit about it earlier, and that's sort of that, where some of those kind of really, to me, I hate to say it this way, but kind of just really goofy, stupid arguments to say what you wanted to see from Luke. It's exactly, they're always like, I want to see him. That's exactly what he did. And he did it by embodying both Obi-Wan and Yoda from a spiritual and philosophical standpoint. And the thing, this is something that's been, in the front of my mind, like, because honestly, when I saw Last Jedi, I was like, would Luke really attack his nephew? And he didn't do it. And I think the thing that reminded me that it's so actually real, a realistic sort of thing for that character to do, is he almost did the same thing to his father, right? He was double handed hacking at Darth Vader and was like, wait a minute, I've gone too far.
And I've same seen thing the people have lined the shots up, right? On Twitter, you see sometimes they compare them, and it's like Rian Johnson knew what he was doing there.
Oh, Rian Johnson framed was brilliant.
Literally the exact same way as that scene. Yes. Shot for shot, it's that scene. He's recreating a moment from Luke's past. This, everyone said that he was taking some kind of crazy step outward. And another thing is like, wait a minute. If the prequels, let's just say in this fantasy world, were released before the originals, and the originals were sequels to the prequels, would everyone say they ruined Obi-Wan and Yoda's characters, right? Would everyone say you made them recluses, you didn't let them have a crazy lightsaber fight in the end? That's not what Jedi are about. Like, clearly in the Star Wars universe, they all kind of follow the same formula towards the end. At least these vast, you know, big Jedi, the main ones, we're talking Luke, we're talking Yoda, Obi-Wan, they all followed the same formula. And that death he had, where it was filled with peace and purpose, they called it. Man, as a Luke Skywalker fan, like, that was like, I cried tears of almost joy hearing that. Like, that's the death that they gave this amazing character, is he got to save and keep the Rebel Alliance alive and die full of peace and purpose without hurting anyone in the process. Like, that's beautiful. Yeah. That's what I want out of Star Wars. So I could see how some people would say, I wish he was actually on Crait and sliced down the legs of all the AT-ATs with a lightsaber. That's your version of The Last Jedi. I'm sorry that you didn't get what you wanted, but for me, The Last Jedi is the one I keep going back to, because every time I watch that finishing sequence, I still get choked up in it, you know?
100%. It's such, and Rian Johnson is a filmmaker. I started to watch Last Jedi a little bit differently, even after I saw Knives Out, because now I see the way the man makes movies. Right. And this is, he brought something very special to Star Wars that I've said it before, is I think what some of the challenge people have with it is every other Star Wars movie deals with galactic consequences. It's the Emperor versus the galaxy. And this was Luke dealing with himself. This was Rey and Ben figuring each other out and dealing with what that means. And the rebellion was super small and it was very focused, and it was dealing with, you know, I mean, even Poe's story, and people love to, yeah, to talk about the Haldo relationship, but that was an important step. It's just like the Martez sisters in the Clone Wars series finale, or series, the season 7. That was important to Ahsoka's character. Yeah. Without the Martez sisters, Ahsoka doesn't become Ahsoka. Without Haldo putting Poe in his place, he doesn't become the leader of this resistance. So such important and brilliant storytelling that is underappreciated. I really believe that.
Yeah, and a lot of people had issues with, they said, oh my God, the whole story was, the ship was running out of gas. That was, and for me, I was like, oh, this is literally, it feels like almost a buffer period in the war where, yep, yes, Luke gets to go find himself and Rey gets to kind of discover things as a Jedi and discover herself along the way. And we get to see all the characters develop. And when Rian Johnson talks about, I'm sure you've seen the documentary that they made and, yep, put along with, mm-hmm, the DVD. So amazing. I mean, if anyone's listening, yep, to this podcast and they haven't seen it, go watch it tonight, because it's, yep, like, maybe you'll watch the movie in a new light because you'll see the love that it was made with and where he was coming from. But it was, he tried to put everyone in the hardest positions for their characters. He kept saying, yep, that. And that's what they did in Empire in a lot of, yep, ways. And he went even further with it, I would say, in The Last Jedi, because he split up the characters a little more and he made it even darker in some ways. Like,
yep,
a lot of the Luke stuff, people have made parallels to depression and how people deal with trauma. And I think it worked in such a fascinating way as a guy who's dealt with depression myself. I look at Luke and I'm like, yeah, he came back from something unbelievable that he never thought he would inside himself, and that's inspiring to me. And when the broom kid picks up that broom at the end of the movie, it's like, okay, yes, I see exactly what he was going for with that entire, yep, movie.
Yep, yep. And you're right, and I think, and I haven't thought of it before until you said that, but I think that might be why there is such a people take The Last Jedi so personally, because you can find something with every character in there, whether it's Rey trying to find herself or Luke coming to terms with, you know, where he is in his life, and or Poe thinking he's the heir apparent and he can do no wrong, but, yep, finds that he can. And so it's a very, very personal film, not just for the characters in the movie, but if you associate with any of those characters. And maybe that's why the Not My Luke Skywalker people had such a problem with it, because they don't want to see themselves that way. They don't, I mean, Luke was quite questioning possibly everything, right? So,
yeah,
I don't know. We'll never figure which that's not what we do. We don't figure those people out, but that's
the Poe point, though, to your point, like, by the time, you know, General Leia passes away in The Rise of Skywalker, and he has that moment where he doesn't know if he could do it, and he's over her body, and then he has the conversation with Billy Dee, and then he leads them into that final battle. It feels earned, and I think it feels, yep, earned because of The Last Jedi. Like, he, right, went from, in The Force Awakens, that boneheaded pilot that's, let's blow things up, let's go in, you know, yep, guns blazing, head down, let's, whatever happens, happens. And by The Force Awakens, when he's leading his guys and, you know, things start to go horribly, and he feels it, and he's like, yep, oh my God, I let everyone down. And he's not, you know, worried for himself. He's worried because he let everyone into disaster before he, yep, realizes, you know, everyone showed up for them, which is an amazing moment in that movie, you know, yeah, kind of the on your left moment.
Yes.
Yep. But it's just tremendous.
Yeah. Wow. So Robbie, this was so much fun, man. Thank you so much for spending some time just geeking out about Star Wars. That's what the show's all about. And that's what, I'm really glad I got the chance to talk to you about it. Tell people where they can follow you online and find your shows.
Yeah, so I'm at Robbie Barstool on Twitter. I'm at That Robbie Fox on Instagram. It's Robbie with an IE, not a Y. And my podcast, My Mom's Basement, which, like I said, kind of covers a bunch of topics, nerdy stuff, Star Wars stuff, Marvel, and then also dives into the realm of UFC, professional wrestling, other movies, music, stuff like that. We've had, like, Danny Boyle has come on the show before. Like, weird, out there, Lynyrd Skynyrd's been on the show. Like, as out there as you could imagine. So I think there's an episode for everybody. Check that out on iTunes, Spotify, wherever podcasts are found.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Robbie. I will definitely have you on again sometime. This was a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
I would love to come on again. Likewise.
Awesome. Thanks. Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Around the Galaxy. Thank you to Robbie Fox, and thank you for listening. If you had fun, please subscribe, like, share, rate, and review it. If you really liked it, please feel free to head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/beyondtheblastdoors. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at ATGcast and keep up with the Star Wars news and us and all the BTBD shows on beyondtheblastdoors.com. If you or someone you know would make a good guest, please drop us a line. So until next time, this has been Pete Fletzer, and we'll see you for our next trip around the galaxy.
Around the Galaxy is copyright 2020 Pete in the Seat Studios. Our music is by the band Silver Colored Knob, whose music can be found on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you find music.